Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, you pick them. We want to welcome Dan Feinberg to the show. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And he joins us biweekly to talk TV. Lots of TV to talk about. Lots of new shows. This is the week when the new fall shows are debuting on TV, and we want to get his thoughts on some of those as well. So let's get Dan on the show. Hey, Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
How are you?
Oh, God, so much new TV. It's unreal.
Yes, absolutely. Before we get out of here, did you watch the Big Brother finale?
I have not had the chance yet, but the thing I find vaguely reassuring is that no matter which of the three of them wins, I'm not going to be outraged.
Right.
And I think that's a big relief.
I totally agree with what you just said, because especially the last 2 years, especially last year. Last year was ridiculous. So you will not be upset by what happens. I can tell you that. So
that's reassuring. No, it makes because it's entirely too much time over the course of summer spent
absolutely
watching Big Brother.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and if the winner is a bad winner,
I know that's how I felt last year. Like I was like, I watched because I watch it three nights a week when it's aired, and then every once in a while, if I don't want to wait to see who wins HOH, I'll either watch I'll watch after dark just so I can get that, and I end up watching like an hour of that or whatever. So it's a lot of time, and you know, last season I was just so angry with the results, so I was not angry last night. So. There you go. All right, Dan, here's another a new show. Let's start with this one because I've seen the first episode, and I don't know how many you've seen. But let's talk a little bit about Manifest, which I watched. I had on my DVR, and I watched it yesterday. Where do you stand on this? And tell everybody what it is.
I stand fairly negative on it. It is the latest in a never-ending string of shows trying to be the next Lost, basically, but not particularly understanding what was successful about Lost. As my colleague Todd Vanderwerf, who writes for Vox, was joking on Twitter the other day, it was like a group of people sitting around a table going, okay, so what did you guys like about Lost? Ooh, I like the mystery. Ooh, I like the characters. And then someone said, I like the plane. And that was the that was the version that they went with. So, yeah, basically the plot, for people who don't know, is a bunch of people are on a flight that vanishes for 5 years, and it suddenly reappears after 5 years. No one has aged. No one knows what happened, and they have to go about their lives again. And all the while, they are wondering, why did they disappear? Why did they reappear? Is there a particular purpose? And yeah, I mean, my biggest problem about the entire show is that there were 191 people on this flight that vanished. How could they possibly have chosen the most boring people on the entire flight to be the main characters? Because heaven knows if anyone on that flight was more boring than the characters who the show is actually focusing on, wow, yeah, that was a boring flight. And yeah, so what did you think of Manifest, Nick?
Well, you know, I'm with you. I think the premise is kind of interesting. I was really happy to see Robert Zemeckis' name on there, although it's just executive producer. So that he obviously didn't have anything pretty much creatively to do with with what it is. And I too found the characters to be boring and not very interesting, and I thought, you know, it was kind of interesting that they split apart the brother and the sister, and that the one, you know, has aged and the other one comes back as the same age. I thought that was kind of an interesting thing that they really didn't go into very much, at least not in the first episode. And I just kept thinking, it was just like I don't know why this kept popping into my head as I was watching it. It was like, well, a whole bunch of people just got dead zoned. That's basically what That's what I kept thinking of. It was like, I just kept thinking, well, this is a whole bunch of Christopher Walkens just got dead zoned, and 5 years have passed by, and they don't, you know. And I just kept thinking about how much better Dead Zone is.
Or like five or six different Stephen King things. Langoliers is the one that I always think about when there's an airplane based mystery, and
right,
it's Stephen King tangential. No, it's just it's just not very good at all on any level. The main characters are dull. And one of the dumbest things for me is I very rarely feel as if I need my entertainment to have more of a Christian or religious skew to it, because that's just not what interests me.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Manifest has this vague, half-baked New Testament theology kind of under the surface. People mention Romans 2:28, characters go to church. And my reaction was, okay, if you want this to be a show with a Christian background, just make it that.
Don't make
it wishy-washy and nothing. Own what you want the show to be. Embrace it. Be that show. Don't be nothing. And so, you know, if it had been a full-on Left Behind-style NBC show, I would not have watched it. I would not have liked it. But I'm 100% sure there's an audience out there that would have.
Yeah.
If you want that audience, give them this show.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. No, that does. It totally makes sense. Yeah, I was really disappointed with it. And now talk about who the creator is of this one, who's behind it.
The creator is Jeff Rake, and he's worked on a number of different shows, none of which all that great. The director is David Frankel, who's fairly talented. I mean, his feature credits, which don't necessarily do him all that much. Well, I mean, he directed The Devil Wears Prada, and so for some people, that's an achievement. And he directed Marley and Me, which, again, is an achievement to some people. He also directed Collateral Beauty, which is some people's least favorite movies ever, from what I've been told. But he's a really good TV director who, among other things, directed on From Earth to the Moon and other stuff. There's no particular style to this. It's not good. And the stars, Josh Dallas played Prince Charming on Once Upon a Time. He has no charm that's evident in this,
and he really
was much better on Once Upon a Time. Melissa Roxburgh is making a career out of being almost hilariously miscast. In the CW's Valor, which tanked and died last season, was really bad. She was supposed to be this kind of badass military authority figure, and every time she came on screen and tried to be authoritative, I kind of giggled. Here she's supposed to be a tough-as-nails police detective, and again, every time she tried doing that, I giggled.
Yeah.
But there's no actor in the cast who has the sort of assertive screen presence where you're like, ooh, okay, this person's going to hold down all of this ridiculousness. It's just really flimsy, and yet 10 million people watched it on Monday night.
Yeah, I saw the numbers, and I was really, I mean, I was interested in it. They successfully drew me in, and again, like I said, whenever I see the name Robert Zemeckis, I'm immediately sort of drawn to it. So I watched it, and but I don't know, I don't know what people thought of it. I know a lot of people watched it. I'm just wondering what people thought.
I have to assume that people are going to have tuned out. They put the first 10 minutes up online a few weeks ago, and the first 10 minutes were easily the best 10 minutes in the show because they established the premise.
Yep.
The premise is an intriguing premise. There's no one who's going to disagree with that. We live in a world in which Malaysian air flights can simply vanish, and they haven't been found.
Right.
This is, you know, people get on airplanes, they're terrified by this.
Yeah.
So you're already tapping into something people feel, but then not to do anything at all with it is just a big disappointment.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. So that's Manifest. Huge numbers for the first week. We'll see what happens next week. All right. Another new show that you reviewed is we talked about it a little bit a couple of times when you were here before. But it was, I looked at it the way they were advertising it, ABC's This Is Us. And that's A Million Little Things, which debuts tonight, Thursday night. Is that correct?
Debuted last night. Wednesday
night. Debuted Wednesday night. Okay, so I didn't watch it because I was watching Big Brother. So A Million Little Things, it looks to me just like, you know, it's like ABC wants to get a This Is Us. And how do you feel about it?
Well, the joke I've been making rather consistently is that the show could be retitled 30-something Reasons Why, because
right,
it is about a It is about a group of mostly 30-somethings who are in the process of trying to figure out why their friend, played by Ron Livingston, who the show does acknowledge is older than the rest of them. I was initially concerned that they were going to attempt to pretend that all of the main characters were the same age, but no. He committed suicide, and none of them understand why. He did not leave a note, or if he did leave a note, it was pushed aside by his potentially evil, scheming, or maybe just overly concerned secretary. It's really unclear. And so basically the friends are all dealing with the aftermath, and they've all been given this jolt in their life, and now they have to figure out how they want to go on with their lives. And, you know, the show has a very good cast. Ron Livingston doesn't really have much to do, which is too bad because I really like Ron Livingston and things, but I also really like Romany Malco, who was in Weeds and is just very, very good. James Rodet from Psych is one of the guys. He's fairly talented. David Giantoli from Grimm, who was also on Road Rules way back in the day. He's one of the guys. And then there's an assortment of actresses who play the various wives and girlfriends who are, frankly, not really much more than that, but they include Battlestar Galactica star Grace Park, Allison Miller, who has been really, really charming in a bunch of things, including the short-lived NBC sitcom Go On, which was a much better depiction of how people handle grief and go on with their lives. But yeah, so basically that's what the show is basically them dealing with grief, and I've seen three episodes, and at no point in the three episodes has it moved beyond that. So This Is Us at its best is a show about all of the facets of life, of which death is but one part. A Million Little Things is a show about death and occasionally finds a way to focus on life and other stuff, but mostly it's a show about grieving and misery. And despite occasional jolts of humor, because it does come from a writer whose background, interestingly, is entirely sitcoms. The creator is DJ Nash, who is a comedy writer, and this is not a comedy. I mean, you're going to discover as we talk about the new shows, this is a wretched year for new broadcast programming. I mean, if you were to ask me what is good this year from the new network shows, I would tell you, catch up on stuff on your DVR and watch some stuff on cable or streaming.
Gotcha. Okay, Dan, hang on.
Sure.
All right, that's Dan Feinberg. We talked a little bit about Manifest and A Million Little Things. It's the new fall season, and Dan's going to break it all down for us, and we've got a lot more TV to talk about right here on 720 WGN. We have to break for the news when we come back, more with Dan right here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking about overplayed songs. One of the most overplayed songs. Songs that you could live a very complete life if you never heard them again. That's going to be coming up along with some other things, too. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, but the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, and it's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Our guest right now is Dan Feinberg. He joins us bi-weekly. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and always a lot of TV to talk about, particularly this time of year when all the new shows are beginning. Let's welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
Hey, before we get to more of the new shows, I haven't talked to you since Kidding had started. You had reviewed it before it started on Showtime, and I've watched it, and I actually really like it. I'm a big fan of it. This is the Jim Carrey show where he plays the children's TV host who has to deal with basically the death of one of his sons. And what's going on, like divorcing his wife and being separated from his wife. And I really like it. Now, have you seen all the episodes?
No, I had only seen one when we briefly talked about it. My colleague Tim reviewed it. I had only had time to see one. Now I've seen as many as have aired. I'm just watching it week to week, and okay. I'm enjoying it also. It's not a show that, I mean, your description was a pretty good and pretty clean description, but it's not a show I would necessarily know how to describe or who to recommend it to,
yeah.
And its ratings have been just terrible.
Oh,
and
really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that, I think that if the people involved want to have another season, I think Showtime likes Jim Carrey and all of that. The early numbers have been pretty awful, and I suspected from the beginning it was going to be a niche-y show,
yeah.
And that
yeah.
It was, you know, and it was going to confuse a lot of people who tuned in, because what Jim Carrey is doing in this show, he's playing not exactly a man-child, but he's playing a guy who's stunted and troubled in a lot of interesting and odd ways, and yet very functional in other ways, and you never know from scene to scene which one of those things he's going to be, and I find it fascinating to watch, and it's got a great cast. Judy Greer is fantastic. Catherine Keener is fantastic. This week's episode had Ricky Lindholm, who I always love in things. She's just tremendously good,
yeah.
Always. It has Frank Langella, who is excellent. It's just hard to describe because...
Can I mention really quickly,
yeah.
Dan, I want to mention Cole Allen, who plays his sons.
Oh.
The kid is great. I think the kid
yes.
is great, and I don't know where he came from. I don't know what his credits are, but he blew me away from the very first episode, and I find him to, for me at least, to be the most compelling character in the show.
He's interesting, and he's very natural. He does not feel like a child actor, and
yeah.
He's playing a tough role because, as he talked about, and as the character talked about in the most recent episode, he's kind of coping with the fact that everyone looks at him and sees his brother,
yeah.
and this is something that sort of haunts him and that keeps him from moving forward. And I think that's fascinating. It's just a hard thing to attempt to tell people that they want to watch. And there are at this moment so many shows about grieving on television,
right?
And it's a lot. So, you know, we just talked about A Million Little Pieces. There's the Facebook Watch drama. Sorry for Your Loss, which I think is better than any of them, honestly. But it's on Facebook Watch, and who the heck knows what that is?
Right.
That's a lot of grief going on these days
yeah.
on television.
Yeah. But I really find the show to be interesting. I think Jim Carrey. I think everybody is really terrific in it, and you know, I think Frank Langella plays it just perfectly. Like I think his performance is really funny, like in a dark kind of way, and I think he's playing it perfectly. Like the notes that he hits are absolutely perfect. I think Catherine Keener obviously is great, and I think this is a really interesting thing for Jim Carrey to do and something for him to take on. And I really like it. I'm disappointed that nobody's watching it, because it's an interesting. And again, like you said, Dan, it's a hard show to recommend, and you don't know really who to recommend it to because it's a weird show. And it deals with stuff that isn't necessarily pleasant, and its shifts in tone are kind of sharp, but I really like it. I really like it.
Yeah, that's an understatement. I mean, some moments it really does feel like it's a comedy, and other moments it does not feel funny at all.
Yeah.
And it swings wildly between those extremes.
Yeah, it certainly does. But I'm compelled by it, and I really like it. And I, you know, all the established cast members are great, but this kid Cole Allen, I think he's got a really great future, and I felt that way from the moment he appeared in the first episode. I just like, where did this kid come from? So, all right,
definitely that is a show that is better than any of the new broadcast shows coming out in the next month and a half.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit. Let's get back into it. Because I watch Big Brother, I got to see. You know, here's a weird thing about this season of Big Brother, Dan. They did mm-hmm. not. They did not do a tie-in where they got to watch a new CBS show. Normally, every season, the house guests get a game that has something to do with. You know, they do a challenge that has something to do with a CBS show, and then they all get to watch the premiere of it. And they didn't do any of that. They didn't do that this summer. I was very surprised.
Huh? And was there a movie night either?
No, there was no movie night either. And they also didn't have the Outback Steakhouse night either. So, the dinner, they didn't have that kind of thing. They really kind of switched it up a little bit this year. So, And you'll see.
I have never heard anyone lament the absence of cross promotion and product placement on a CBS reality show.
I'm actually not lamenting it. I was just surprised because the amount of advertising that they do, you know, during Big Brother for the upcoming fall season, this is extraordinary. And I didn't think they would miss an opportunity to do that within the actual game itself, which they do every season. I'm not lamenting it. I was just surprised. So.
I'm trying to think of what they would have even shown them of the new CBS shows. I can't think that there was a new CBS show that they could have shown them that they would have been excited about. I mean, God, how excited do you think that group would be about Magnum?
See, that I don't know. That's the one that I would think that they would have shown. And so let's get to it. You did a review of Magnum P.I. This is the reboot with Jay Hernandez. Let's talk about Magnum P.I.
You know, like, just so I don't sound too negative about absolutely everything, because perish the thought, Magnum P.I., to its utter credit, has beautiful Hawaiian scenery, and it completely and totally lives up to the fast cars of the original. And so if what you crave from a TV show called Magnum is fast cars and Hawaiian scenery, then I would say that Magnum P.I. on CBS, the new version, has you covered. If you want anything else, it may fall short, most particularly if your memories of Magnum are pretty much about enjoying Tom Selleck in the lead role, because it was very much a star vehicle. Jay Hernandez is not bad. He's just not Magnum, and Tom Selleck at that particular moment was about as charismatic as a TV star could be. Yep. Many people would tell you that Blue Blood star Tom Selleck remains as charismatic as a TV star can be. And Jay Hernandez just isn't that. And so you find yourself very quickly wishing that it were more of an ensemble, because you've got Zachary Knighton from Happy Ending as Rick, and he's charming and funny. You have Stephen Hill as TC. He's good. The show's big change from the original, other than dropping the comma between Magnum and P.I. and dropping the mustache from Magnum's face, is that whereas once Higgins was a significantly older than Magnum, stern British man, he has now become a younger than Magnum, sexy British woman. And so that means that we now get to have will they or won't they sexual tension between Magnum and Higgins, which, let's be honest, was always there. It's just a little bit more on the surface now.
All right.
But it's not good enough. It's the pilot was directed by Justin Lin, who does a very good job directing pilots, and then does a very good job directing pilots that always look significantly cheaper and less exciting in the weeks after the pilot. So Magnum was already at very best okay and a little bit exciting. I have no real expectations for subsequent episodes, and I just don't know where the audience is. There's not enough here for it to be exciting for people who don't know the franchise. You know, if you don't know it, all you would think was, oh, it's another one of CBS's shows that are set in Hawaii, because clearly they have an infrastructure there. But if you know the series, I simply can't imagine anyone who grew up loving the Tom Selleck series going, okay, this is a worthwhile substitute for that, unfortunately.
Okay. All right, so there's that. So is there anything in the broadcast in the broadcast schedule that you didn't really dislike? Is there anything that pops out that was not, like, is there a sitcom that's kind of funny?
I can tell you don't want to wallow in the negative, and yet here we are.
Yeah.
This is just where we are in the broadcast arc. Is this is what they're doing. One of the shows that premiered last night, and one of the few broadcast shows that Tim reviewed, is Single Parents on ABC,
right.
And it stars Taryn Killam, it stars Leighton Meester, and I laughed a couple times at that pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think it has some potential. It was co-created by Liz Mayweather, who did New Girl. There's some writing there are some characters, and it's an ABC show, and ABC does a spectacular job always casting children. So the kids in the show are pretty good as well. So I would say that that is a show that is decent with potential to maybe be good, as opposed to a bunch of other shows that are sort of with potential to maybe be decent. Next week, you've got the premieres of Happy Together and The Neighborhood. Both of the pilots are dismal, but both of the pilots are full of really, really talented people. Happy Together stars Damon Wayans Jr., and it could be good. It's just the pilot isn't. The Neighborhood has Cedric the Entertainer. It has Tashina Arnold, who is fantastic. It has Max Greenfield and Beth Beers. You know, it's got great people in it. It's not a good pilot. So, yeah, it's... It is a bleak broadcast slate, and I just don't know what to say, except that if you look at some of the ratings, you know, Manifest did very well. New Amsterdam, which premiered on Tuesday night, did reasonably well. It got a sampling, so that's what the networks are going for, is they're saying, can we find a sort of middle ground wherein we're not offending anyone and wherein we can draw 7 to 10 million viewers? FBI on CBS drew 8-ish million viewers, didn't draw very many young viewers, but if it holds that audience, that's a success for them, and that is where we are on broadcast TV in 2018.
Okay. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Yep. Dan Feinberg is with us. We got more TV to talk about. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more TV with Dan right here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here in downtown Chicago. We are talking TV with our biweekly visit from Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, you mentioned FBI before the break. Which was another one that they advertised incessantly during Big Brother. And I don't know why I find it weird that Dick Wolf is doing a show at CBS. Is he just trying to conquer all the networks?
Well, the explanation he gave at press tour, and it seems reasonable, I guess, is that at the moment he was pitching this show, which remains under his deal with Universal Television, NBC just didn't have any schedule space for it. And it was exactly that simple. CBS said, we got schedule space, come on over. And they didn't even order a pilot. They gave it a straight to series order. And if you're a show creator, that's all you want to hear in the entire world is, come on over, we'll give you 13 episodes. And so just that easy. And, you know, it's not as if Dick Wolf isn't still doing all three current Chicago shows on NBC. And they just announced a couple weeks ago that the Law & Order franchise is coming back with Law & Order Hate Crimes, which seems like as likely a thing as any.
Did they have announced a cast or anything for that?
No, they have not yet announced a cast. I believe Warren Light, who ran SVU for about a decade, is going to be creating it and steering it. So, and if you think about it, that seems like a pretty logical expansion of the formula. Last year's Law & Order E.D. Falco's Wig was not a very good expansion of the formula, and I don't think we will see another Law & Order True Crime E.D. Falco's Wig season. But, yeah, so basically CBS gave him this opportunity in this exact moment, but don't worry, there will still be plenty of Dick Wolf on NBC.
Yeah.
Thank heavens.
There you go. So
FBI is very much, though, a Dick Wolf NBC show that's on CBS.
Mm-hmm. And it's got an interesting cast. First of all, tell everybody who's in it. And, you know, I mean, obviously the title alone tells you what it's about, I would imagine.
I'm glad you're not going to ask me to explain the premise, because the premise of the show is the FBI attempts to solve crimes in New York City, in this case. Just that simple. And yeah, the cast is good. The two main special agents who the show follows, at least in the first episode, are played by Missy Peregrine from Reaper and Stickit, and most recently Rookie Blue.
I can't tell you how glad I am that you mentioned Stickit. I have no idea why, but I'm glad that you mentioned Stickit. I happen to really, really like that movie.
It's not a bad movie at all. It's part of why I like her. She was also very charming on Reaper, which is a show that I liked quite a bit. And I've been frankly a little bit disappointed that that Missy Peregrine has kind of steered her career in the direction of procedural. She was on Rookie Blue for 6 seasons, I guess, 5 seasons, however long it ran, and I watched one of them. She will now be on FBI as long as it runs, and I probably will not watch any more of it, so... Oh, well, she's not worried about whether or not I get to see her in things, and that is perfectly fair. Uh-huh. She is entitled. Her co-star is Zico Zaki, who has one of the best names of any actor on television, and certainly will give you among the most Scrabble points of any actor's name on television. So, Zico Zaki, see if your Scrabble board will accept that. Their boss is played by Jeremy Sisto, who went through the period of his career where he was on a Law and Order, and he went through the period of his career where on TV he was playing sort of the don't play by any rules cop, the cop who's rugged and a little bit street tough. Now he's playing the kind of boss who's in the office coordinating things, and that's where Jeremy Sisto is in his career. Cela Ward is eventually going to be everybody's boss, but she was not in the pilot. Connie Nielsen is the boss in the pilot, and in ways that have yet to be explained because CBS didn't send out 2 episodes, one of the characters is going to leave and the other one is going to come in, and it'll just be a thing that happens. The pilot is average. It follows an investigation involving a bombing. There are various suspects that are ripped from headlines. People say MS-13 a few times, and that's, kind of trendy. And Dallas Roberts, who's been in lots of things and, Good Wife and other things, is really good and entertaining as a kind of alt-right fanatic, basically. It's a really good, juicy villain role, and he's terrific in it. I don't know that they're going to be using him again, unfortunately. If they promised me a full season of him as the adversary, I might watch. It seems like a decent show. It seems like a good enough match on CBS. It didn't have a huge premiere. It had an okay premiere. So I don't know. I don't know if CBS is going to start getting worried about it soon, or if the audience will just find it, because maybe the Dick Wolf audience didn't know to look for it on CBS initially, and they'll find their ways to it eventually.
Yeah, I'm really amazed that SVU. That's the SUV is the one where they drive around in a truck and solve crimes. But SVU is entering its 20th season. I mean, that's amazing.
Some of these numbers for shows that are currently running, Simpsons starting its 30th season. Jeez. That's amazing. A little incredible. Mind-boggling. But yes, 20 seasons for SVU is remarkable. Frankly, 13 seasons for It's Always Sunny is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
There are a lot of long-running shows where I am fairly impressed they've made it as long as they have gone. Grey's Anatomy is in its 43rd season, and people don't even seem to understand that.
I always forget that thing is still on. You know what I mean? It's one of those shows that, is still on the air? We have to break. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us. By the way, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. We'll take a break. When we come back, the news is coming up next on 720 WGN. Yeah. And welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here, 18 floors above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday for your bumps, and that's one artist, 3 songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them in a little bit. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6. And I'll be joining Steve Cochran for my weekly Thursday morning visit at 620. So stick around for that. We'll talk about the movies that are coming out this weekend and some other entertainment stuff. Right now, we are talking with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we talk TV, lots of new TV to talk about as well. So let's get Dan back on the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, before the break, we were talking about long-running shows that are still chugging along, and some shows like what are other examples, Dan, that you can think of? It's like, wait, that show is still on? Because that right now, obviously, Grey's Anatomy is the one that kind of takes the cake, where people are like, and you know, the other thing about this, Dan, is like there are shows that would run for a long time where. In the past, where I would, all of my friends, none of them watched it. Nobody I knew watched any of these shows, and yet they just, like, one of them is JAG. Nobody I knew watched that show. I was like, who's watching this show? And that was on for several seasons.
Well, it was on for a long time, but then, of course, it became NCIS.
Ah.
So, basically, JAG spun off as NCIS, and then while JAG ceased to exist, NCIS became NCIS LA and NCIS New Orleans, and to the best of my knowledge, all three of those are still on the air.
Yeah.
For heaven's sake, one of the shows that I vaguely am baffled continues to be on the air is something like How to Get Away with Murder, which is a show that had so much hype when it premiered and won the Emmy for Viola Davis in such dramatic and emotional fashion, and has now become such an afterthought show. A little sad and strange that was the fate of that show. And I think Viola Davis probably likes the fact that she gets a steady network television paycheck that is no doubt huge for doing 13 to 15 episodes per season, and yet apparently it's not doing anything to get in her way of doing movies for which she's nominated for awards. And
yeah.
I can't wait to see Widows when it comes out this fall.
I have a colleague who reviews movies here with me, and he was at the Toronto Festival, and he saw Widows, and he said it's great, like really, really great. So.
The thing is, it, like, remarkable. I hadn't, you know, hit the cast or whatever, and I hadn't put together what the movie was, what the cast was, and that it was Steve McQueen. And when I saw the first trailer for it, I'm like, oh my God, I have to see this. This movie has to be the next movie I see. And unfortunately, it's not actually out, which is very frustrating to me. And instead, I'll just keep seeing other movies instead. Killing time,
right.
but I want to see Widows. That's the one I want to see.
Yeah. Well, Viola Davis, I think she's a national treasure. I love her. I've never seen an episode of How to Get Away with Murder, but I think she's a tremendous actress, and I find her, every time she is interviewed, I just find her ridiculously charming and awesome. And she was on Jimmy Kimmel just a few nights ago and just killed it. And she's so funny, and I just think she's great. So I root for her, and I'm glad she's getting a paycheck. It's a nice, steady paycheck. So,
Exactly. I do not. I in no way begrudge her at all. It just happens to be a show that I watched. I think I watched two full seasons of it and got to the end, and I'm like, I have no idea what's happening anymore, and I really and truly don't care. And finally, I stopped, and it takes a lot to get me to stop watching shows, and
yeah.
I just let that one go.
And another long-running show that's entering its final season, 10 seasons, is Modern Family, which continues to... Does it do well? Does Modern Family still do well?
It does okay. Have they actually announced that this is the final season for that one? I can't even remember. I know they have for Big Bang Theory. I think we might just assume.
Well, the other night, Sofia Vergara was on... Kimmel, and they basically said that it was the last season.
Okay. Well, I mean, it should have been the last season, like five seasons ago.
Right.
yeah. No. That show has become so totally unbearable that I often forget that at least for its first two or three seasons, it was a really good show, and that it remains a show with a phenomenal cast that occasionally still tries to do interesting things, not with very much success anymore. But it's a show that, because it kept getting nominated for Emmys for at least 3 or 4 years or 5 years or 6 years after when it stopped being worthy of them,
yeah.
I came to genuinely resent it. and that's too bad, because I need to keep in mind with shows like that, that the period that they had where they were good and innovative, you know, it shouldn't be completely invalidated because it went on too long, because it's not anyone their fault that ABC kept throwing money at them, and that some viewers still keep watching.
Yeah.
But it's a show that went, that sort of gave ABC its comedy brand and then has kind of become the worst comedy on ABC, and ABC has a lot of other good comedies.
Right.
But,
okay.
Oh well.
Now, well, speaking of comedies, here's a new one. I'm very, very curious about it. Executive produced by Amy Poehler. I Feel Bad. I've seen the commercials for it, and I'm excited about it. Whenever I see Amy Poehler's name on anything, I immediately smile. So, tell us about I Feel Bad.
Well, I believe the first two episodes are probably available on demand because it did have a sneak preview last week.
Right.
I believe.
Right.
I think during Yom Kippur or something, which was, you know, if anyone involved had the thought of premiering a show called I Feel Bad on the Jewish Day of Atonement, that was a brilliant idea. I suspect literally no one at NBC gave any thought to that. So there you go.
Right.
Also, not a particularly Jewish show. It is a show, actually, that is interesting in some large part because it is a predominantly Indian-American cast, and it stars Sarayu Blue, and it's sort of a story of a wife and a mother and a career woman who is attempting to have it all and feels bad when society judges her for not being perfect at each one of the things that she's attempting to do. And I think it's a show with a solid premise, with a good cast, and it's still sort of finding itself. So I chuckled a couple times. I've seen three episodes of this one. I don't think I laughed hard at any of them, but I think that the leading lady is very good, and I think some of the people in the supporting cast, Paul Adelstein, a couple of the young actors. Basically, her character is a designer for a video game company, and she works with a group of millennial guys who are all differently awkward and nerdy, some of them in very, very, very stereotypical ways, some of them in slightly less stereotypical ways. And so they, you know, she's kind of their mother as well. It's not bad. I would say that this is one of those shows that I would put in the category of decent with the potential to be good, and keeping in mind that nothing this season that's new is actually straight up unqualified good, I would say it's one of the better new comedies of the fall broadcast wise.
Okay. Yeah, I plan on watching that one for sure, because I love the lead as well. I think she's just great. So, let's see. Let's say we haven't talked about The Deuce, have we, since it premiered?
I don't think we have. I've only watched one episode so far. I'm two behind, just because life is piling up on my DVR. It's just how these things go. But how have you felt about this season?
I love it. I think it's great. And you know, the jump in time that they did, I think, is really interesting. You know, and where it goes and what they're covering. And I really think that this is just outstanding work that Maggie Gyllenhaal is doing. She's just phenomenal in the show. And I think it's perhaps the best work of her career. But I really love it. And, you know, I mean, the quality of the writing and the acting, it's you know, anytime David Simon's name is on anything, it's going to be good. And The Deuce, it does not disappoint. I think this season has been great as well. So.
And they already announced that it's doing a third season, which will be its last season. And I think I'm probably okay with that.
No,
I
also want to mention, I want to mention a show that's coming back tonight that you and I have championed. And it you know, one of the most creative and one of the funniest sitcoms on TV. It comes back NBC tonight, and that's The Good Place, which I just love that show so much. And I'm so excited that it's returning.
And the first episode, or the first two episodes, I guess, are very, very good. It's totally satisfying. They made me laugh. They made me smile. They made me happy and pleased that is a show that exists on broadcast television.
Yeah.
It still feels a little bit like a show that should be on Showtime or FX or somewhere else. And I like that it's there, and it speaks well of NBC that it exists as prominently as it does.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm excited to see the new season. And I love where that show went. It was one of the things I love about that show was, one, you know, I thought it was just going to be, you know, a showcase for, you know, Ted Danson and Kristen Bell, but then it became this fantastic ensemble show. And then where it went plot-wise and the twists and turns, one of the most consistently surprising shows on TV, which I don't normally expect from a half-an-hour sitcom. I don't expect that kind of incredible surprise creativity that goes into almost every episode of The Good Place. I just think the show is great.
It is, and it commits to what it does so wonderfully. It goes these loopy places, and then it says, okay, let's actually deal with where it's going. And so based on where things left off in the second season, how they situate themselves in the third season is a real pleasure to watch.
That's great. I can't wait. I'm very excited. Okay, also excited about, you know, anytime you can see Anthony Hopkins play Lear, that's pretty great. And Amazon has a version of King Lear, and it's a modern version, is it not?
It is set in a dystopic alternate future of England in which it's a military aristocracy, but still the leader of the country is King Lear, and he's still a king. Everyone's just in military uniforms. And yeah, so yet another thing with an unreal cast. Anthony Hopkins as Lear, but then as his daughters, you have Emma Thompson. Who else is in it? Florence Pugh plays Cordelia, and who else? It's an amazing cast, and it's
Emma Watson.
Oddly short.
Emma Watson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I got confused. No, Emily Watson.
Emily Watson, right?
Emma Thompson. Emily
right,
Watson,
right, right, right. It's not Hermione.
That was what confused me as I was going through things in my head. I started with Emma Thompson, then I'm like, Emma Watson? No, not that. Never. Anyway, yes, they're all great. It's a very, very shortened version of Lear. Lear on stage can be 4 hours without any problems at all, and 3 hours without breaking a sweat. This is under 2 hours.
Wow.
And it feels really choppy.
Wow.
It feels really choppy. It feels really thin. If you know the play, you will feel as if a lot of it has been gutted. You know, not the greatest hits. The things that you mostly are going to watch from Lear, it has. But, yeah, an hour and 55 minutes for Lear
is pretty much
as tight as it can reasonably go.
That is a lot. Man, that's a lot of text to cut. Man.
Yes. Yeah, and you feel it. If you know the play, you'll feel it. On the other hand, watching Anthony Hopkins as King Lear is just such a pleasure. Almost nothing else matters. And Emma Thompson is great. I think Emily Watson, it might be even better. I think that the supporting cast, every little role, you know, you got Jim Broadbent, you have Jim Carter from Downton Abbey, an amazing cast, and you know, they do right by what's left of the play. I totally could have watched another hour of it, and I don't really get why you would feel the need to make it this short.
Yeah,
but you know, it's directed by Richard Eyre, who has directed many productions of classic Shakespeare on the stage, and he knows his thing. He actually directed the National Theater production of King Lear with Ian Holm, which aired on PBS. And that is, you know, of productions I haven't actually seen in person, it's possibly my favorite King Lear.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fantastic. And it was Richard Eyre who directed it. And that one was already short. That one was only 3 hours long.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
You know.
All right. Well, I mean, I you can't argue with that cast, so I'm definitely going to watch it. But man, that's they cut the hell out of that thing. Clearly, jeez. So, all right.
There's some talent in that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, and all this stuff, all the reviews that we were just talking about, people can read it at Hollywood Reporter, and they can follow you on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. Dan, enjoy Big Brother.
I look forward to it, and guess what? There are only about like another 30 broadcast network shows premiering over the next 2 weeks, so we'll be able to cover plenty of them in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks, Dan.
Sounds good.
There you go. There's Dan Feinberg, everybody. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. All right, we're going to take a break here on 720 WGN.